The Rebel Leadership Podcast, a refreshing take on authentic leadership told through real stories. Let's smash the status quo and change how leaders lead once and for all. Of all the emotions that come with leadership, one is most important: courage. When it feels hard, scary, daunting, when you feel doubt, uncertainty, stress, something inside you draws you in to lean into that moment and have the courage to do what you know is right. On today's episode, we're talking to Bess Friedman, the CEO of Brown Harris Stevens. She oversees 55 offices and more than 2,300 agents across New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, and Florida. Under her leadership, Brown Harris Stevens has grown into one of the largest and most successful privately held real estate companies in the United States. In other words, she is a badass New York City real estate mogul. But first, a word from Steve Harvey to inspire our exploration of this critical topic. So I wanted to do something a little different this time around. And I know I asked you to prepare stories of courage today. So I came across a Steve Harvey clip, and it's about 20 seconds, and it was so pertinent to our topic. So I wanted to play that really quick and just get your take on what he says and how that applies to our stories of courage conversation to get us started.
Every successful person in this world has jumped. I'm going to tell you what I mean by that. You are going to have to jump. You cannot just exist in this life. You have got to try to live. If you are waking up thinking that there's got to be more to your life than it is, man, believe that it is. But to get to that life, you're going to have to jump.
So I thought it was so interesting.
Wow.
What do you think about that jump? What does that make you feel like?
That's so powerful. And it's so true. I mean, we sometimes get so caught up in everything that's going on, and the mind races so much. And we're on this sort of hedonic treadmill. But at every second and every opportunity, there is an opportunity to push and to do more. And I think we get those messages even at an early age, you know, because we're confronted with challenges. You know, you and I spoke about, you know, the other day about stories of courage. And, you know, I started to think about that because I never thought about that in myself before. And I said, okay, courage. I mean, you think of some like big, strong person lifting things up. And I started to think back. And as I reflected back, even when I was, you know, 8 years old, 9 years old, and would have, you know, somebody trying to bully me or, you know, those sorts of things, sticking up for myself, or when kids would throw pennies at me because I'm Jewish, standing up for myself, or put swastikas on, you know, we had a fort, you know, or when I was in Boston, my freshman year of college, and the kids were saying the N-word in my class. And I stuck up and said, no, that is not okay. Always having these voices of speaking up and doing what's right. It's just, I think what happens sometimes, we're afraid. It's hard to be a standout and do something that goes against the grain. But if you listen to that voice and you do what you know is right, because we all know what's right, you feel better about who you are. And at the end of the day, that's all that matters, is who you are as a person.
What do you think we're so afraid of?
You know, I think people are afraid of being called out, being teased, being different. I mean, as you know, when you're different, people make fun of you, and that's always hard. And we want to fit in. We want to be popular. And also all the messages that come at us all the time are, you have to be cute. You have to be smart. You need to wear this. You have to have that. You need to have money. You can't have, you know, look odd, you know? And so that influences, especially I think as women, because, you know, women not only have to be smart, but they better be cute and they better look right and they better be nice. I mean, Hillary Clinton, not to get into politics, but part of it was that she didn't have the likability factor. And women are always confronted with that sort of thing as well, especially teenagers. I mean, I have a teenage daughter, and the social media and all that messaging, it's hard to be like, okay, I'm just going to be who I am, who I feel is right. But society is always giving us a different message. And you have to, you know, I think we battle with that. Even as adults, we have those battles.
Did you learn from other leaders around you who were confident in their own skin to grow your own? Or what was your journey towards finding that courage on your leadership journey?
You know, I have everything that I know or what I do every day is an influence from people around me, whether it's current people that I work with to the very beginning. You know, it's cliche, but I had a mom and a dad. My dad passed away from a car accident almost 30 years ago, but my mom, thank goodness, she's 80 and still here and doing great. Mm-hmm. But my parents were these sort of warriors. They were hippies. I would see them pick up a hitchhiker and drop them off at a bus station and buy them a ticket, or buy a sandwich for somebody and feed them, or pick up a kid who lived downtown who didn't have anything and bring them to our house and have them have Thanksgiving with us. Like, so my parents were these warriors of like always doing the right thing, always being like, you're the underdog, speak out for people. And so I had that model. They were not afraid. And they always sort of did the right thing. And that was an influence on me. As a little kid, I watched them and I was like, yeah, I was like, that's the way to be, you know? So I was fortunate because not everybody is blessed in that way. You don't always have parents who are telling you the right way or being an example. And by the way, they were not perfect. Let me just say,
right.
They had crazy, they were crazy. They were eccentric. You know, nobody is, you know, as the saying goes, the only perfect people are in the cemetery. There's no such thing. So, but I did have great parents. And then throughout my life, every place I've worked, I've always had somebody who was like a great influence on me, who helped me, who taught me, and still have that today. So I've been really fortunate.
Think back to when you were starting your career in real estate. What was your first moment of courage?
Oh, God. That's tough. You know, in firing somebody. I, you know, was in real estate. I began my career in real estate almost 20 years ago, and I was doing sales. You know, I was an agent way back, and was working with people and selling their apartment, and they were so incredibly abusive, demanding, rude. It was unbearable. And I know we're in the service and information business, but it became such a heavy weight on me and it was overwhelming. And look, you know, you don't get paid in real estate until you deliver results. So you can work a year and not get a penny until you sell it. But I just called them and just said, listen, I wish you guys all the best. This is not working out. I think you need to get another agent. I gave them some names of people and wished them well. A lot of people thought I was stupid for doing that because it's business, you know, right. But for my mindset and the way I felt, and I just was feeling like crap every day. It's like being in an abusive relationship.
Did something happen that triggered you to pick up the phone and make that call?
Yeah. One day the husband called me and it was like I was there with my daughter who was little, really a baby at the time. And he was just like, so went off, so aggressive on the phone with me. And I was like, I listened to what he had to say. And I remember I just like hung up and I was like, I didn't want to cry, but you know, I just felt so like beaten down. And so I like took a deep breath and I called, of course, my mom, who's my rabbi in chief. And I talked to my mom a little bit about it. And, you know, she was like, look, sweetie, you're going to have tons of opportunities, tons of clients. You have to, you know, take care of yourself. You need to like do what you talk to your manager, make sure it's okay. See if you can get out of the agreement or transfer to somebody else and relieve yourself of this. And so I did it. I did it because I knew it was just too toxic. And you gotta try to keep toxicity out of your orbit. You can't always do it because life is as such, but in that, I was really glad that I did that. And you know what? I probably made less money as an agent because I worked with a lot of people that I wanted to work with. And sometimes, you know, you can't always do that. It's hard. It's a balance.
So as you were ascending in your career, do you recall any other moments of courage that when you think back about this topic, make you smile or like, how the heck did I do that?
You know, it's weird. I kind of, as I ascended, you know, or worked through my career, I always feel like in leadership, you're not born a leader. You learn things from people for the most part. Some people have natural abilities, but I kind of always believed in myself and my instincts. So even though I started out as an agent, I knew there was another calling for me to do more. And I kind of showed up helping a lot of people in the office, other agents. And so what happened, that sort of manifestation was leadership called on me for a position in the company to help guide the agents because I was doing that. So I didn't say, give me the job, I'll prove it. I proved it and they gave me the job. And so I dropped off being an agent and got into management, and I loved it. And I was doing really well, but I hit a ceiling and the same thing happened. You know, then another company came calling and said, you know, you could probably do a lot more than what you're doing. And so, and I believed myself, like I was like, yes, why not you? Of course you can, you can. And if you don't know everything, but I knew that I could learn it. And I was willing to be that student of everything. And so I kept pushing. I never doubted myself. It was nerve-wracking to give up security, to go to the next level and do things. Because you never know, the new company, like where I am now at Brown Harris Stevens, it had a reputation for being kind of an old school, very conservative, not edgy, dusty, as my daughter would call it, dusty firm. It's been around since 1873. And so when I was leaving Corcoran to come to Brown Harris, the CEO of Corcoran said to me, you're never going to fit in there. You're not going to like it there. It's just not you. And so I was like, holy shit, is this going to be, I was a little, you know, I was like, will I fit in there? And when I got here, like the first 6 months, I was doubting what my decision, because people were not as welcome as I thought. It took time because, as we know, trust, what is the definition? It's the stacking of small moments over time. And I had to build that with people here, with the executives, with the agents, and they had to get to know me and I had to get to know them. And after a year or so, I was like, yeah, this is, and little by little, I have always just done the work and the other stuff followed. The people that are like, oh, I want a title, they're looking at it the wrong way. That's not how you approach anything. You figure out, you do what you want to do, and then the rest would and should follow. You have to kind of manifest it and be consistent. It's not about the intensity of some big fancy title. It's about the consistency of doing the job.
And do you even really want that? You know, sometimes doing the job ahead of time makes you realize what you don't want. The title is not always, you know, what you had envisioned in your head. It comes with a whole slew of other challenges and sacrifices.
That's so true. Yeah. I mean, where you sit, well, I read this, which is so true. Where you sit is not who you are. So if you are whatever title, CEO, president, whatever, manager, you know, librarian, whatever you do, I mean, that is what we do. This is, you know, we all have our roles and we go to work and we have a purpose and that's fulfilling, but it's not who you are. It's just a piece of what you do. Hopefully it's something that's helping, giving back, doing something positive. I mean, you can be a librarian, you can work in a supermarket, a drugstore, be a CEO, and what you do, you can change the world. You can do something. 100%. How? Just by being kind, smiling at somebody, doing things the right way. All of that can transform the universe. And I think that people seem to think it's something else. It's not. It's right here. It's right now. It's every day.
Throughout your stories that you were telling before, there's a sister to courage, which is belief. Right? And personally, I've found that the more I can block out the naysayers and the people telling me that you can't, and the more I listen to that inner belief, sometimes it manifests as confidence. Sometimes it's just, you don't even know why you believe in a certain way, but you do, right? The more you listen to that, the more I listen to that, the more courage I have to stand up for what I believe in. It's this self-fulfilling prophecy. What's your perspective about belief and how that's groomed and cultivated in leaders?
I mean, that it's, you know, I think every person, I don't know if you have this, Allison, but has this, sometimes you have what's called imposter syndrome.
100%.
Right? Where you're like, ooh, maybe I'm not, you know, like you doubt yourself. And sometimes it comes for me in the form of, you know, social media or hate mail, which sometimes, you know, I do a lot of interviews on TV, and I kind of tell things like they are, and get a good amount of people writing me mean things or saying things that aren't nice, which is okay, but it hurts. So you have to kind of block and say, look, I know what I'm doing. I'm doing the best I can. And so you have to constantly, I think, revisit the things in yourself that you believe in. So for me, what is sacred and essential to keep myself strong and feeling good is physical activity. You know, emotion comes from motion. And if I do not work out, I worked out this morning, I worked out yesterday, I worked out the day. If I do not do something with my body and move it, my mind is almost like it's sitting like on the couch as a potato.
Yeah.
And so that helps me, and reading. So physical activity and reading are my two things that really get me feeling strong and feeling my belief in myself, learning from others, you know, all that stuff. And that's essential. If I didn't do those things, I think it would diminish a little bit of how I feel about me as a person.
Was there a point in time where you realize how critical that stuff was? Because that's the easiest part when you're young and up and coming in career to put to the side. But was there something that happened where you're like, hang on a second, no one's going to run on that treadmill for me. No one's going to eat healthy for me. That you have to choose yourself and believe that you have time for that. That's almost courage in and of itself. But was there something that happened to you or a pivot point in your career that made you put those things first?
I think there's not one specific thing. I think it's been a constant work in progress. It's, you know, that saying that the heaviest weight at the gym is the front door. So I'm going to just say this, because it's not like, okay, I'm there, I've arrived. It's a constant transcending, you know? So like this morning I was up at 6 and I have this book I'm reading, Noah Tishby's book, which I love. And it's like so good. And I started reading it last night and I'm halfway through it. And when I woke up this morning, I thought, you know, reading is also good for you. Maybe you just don't go to the gym and read more of this book, because that's exercise of your mind. So I started telling myself that story. And then I was like, okay, no, you're not. Put your stuff on. So the battle is there every day. You know, it's there every day, and it's always, nope, you got to do. So it's a constant. I think we always talk to ourselves. We cut ourselves breaks here and there, but I know that I'm better when I do those things. So I constantly try to think about that, that I'm going to feel better and be better if I do it. But I think we all have to like tiptoe with ourselves.
100%. Every single time after you go for a run or you, whatever your prerogative, you feel so much better, so much more you and present. And that's also a big part of rebel leadership. Like you owe it to everybody around you to be your best self. So whether or not they realize that you need to spend that time on yourself, you do, because that's the version of you that they're craving. every day.
So true. And you know what, Allison, we know, I'm sure you know this too. We know when we're not being our best selves. Like I know when I'm, you know, petty and acting stupid or being rude or like getting it, like my worst defect is impatience. 100%. So impatient. But I read something recently in a book, this story of this Cherokee like grandfather who's telling his grandson the story that inside of every human being, every person, there's a battle between two wolves. One wolf represents evil, and that's like greed, hate, anger, animosity. And the other one represents good, which is love, compassion, generosity, etc. And the little boy says, well, grandpa, which one wins the battle? And he says, whichever one you feed. So when you are feeding, like you, have you ever like been like, just see yourself being petty? Like I see myself like getting petty over something and I'm outside of my body watching myself act like a complete schmuck. And I'm like, why are you doing that? But, you know, so I kind of, we're not perfect, but when we can see it and know it and call it out and be like, okay, I can do better. I feel like that's kind of how we evolve as people and we strive to be better. I know I am constantly trying to push myself to be better and not get mired in the minutia of stuff, which is, it's hard.
What was your lowest point in leadership?
Oh God. Oh, that's such a good question. My lowest point in leadership, I'll tell you, was, you know, when I gave my notice and I left Corcoran to come to Brown Harris Stevens, they were threatening to sue me because I had a non-compete. And they also weren't paying me and they wanted me to sit out for a year and they were making it, they were like getting their lawyers and they have deep pockets and I had no income and they were suing me and I had to hire a lawyer and I have two kids and I was raising them alone, even though, you know, my ex and I are very friendly, I was paying for everything. So I was feeling so overwhelmed, so stressed, and I was making a change to come to a new company, which I didn't know anything if it was going to work. And I remember feeling like I was in the red. I couldn't afford the lawyer. And I remember just feeling the sense of how the hell am I going to figure this out? I felt an overwhelming sense of economic stress and indecisiveness about, did I do the right thing? And there was like a week of that where I was weepy, stressed out, not functioning well. What I did do was I called a friend who's still a friend to this day, even though we have very different political views, which is okay. And I asked him if I could borrow some money that I would pay him back within a year and interest, whatever. And he so kindly the next day sent me the money. No joke. Wow. And he lent me the money. I was able to pay the lawyer, you know, do what I had to do. And I paid him back within a year, but you know what? It was all of that was probably one of the more challenging because I had all of this stuff coming at me. But it was still the best decision. One of the best decisions I ever made was to leave where I was, which was comfortable. Cause you know, you get comfortable and you just, you know, and to do something that really challenged myself. And I'm so grateful I did it, but it was tough.
Well, and the courage to make that phone call to him.
Yeah, I was a little, it's embarrassing when it comes to money. Money is one of those things that like everybody gets a little weird about. And, you know, money is so, I always say it's the cheapest form of currency. Like who gives it, like your reputation matters so much more than money. But you need it. You got to pay bills, especially if you're living in New York City. It's expensive. But I knew that I needed to do something because I was going to be had to pay some things. And so he's also such a good-hearted, generous human being. And I'm grateful to him till this day. I sent him Lobel steak with the payback as well, which is I'm sure he remembers that. But I will always remember, you always like that Maya Angelou quote, you always remember how people make you feel, good or bad. And when people do right by you, it's like you store that and you cherish it and you remember it. And so I'm glad I asked him. And I'm very grateful that he lent it to me. I think we're always, we you know, like you tell yourself, we're always afraid to do things because we tell ourselves the story, how it's going to turn out. We kind of dress rehearse what we think will happen, as opposed to just, if you take a chance, most people want to help you if they can. They really do. So many people have helped me. When I ask them, they're like, of course I'll help you. All sorts of leaders from all walks of life have offered to help me. And so just ask, what's the worst thing they can say is no? You already have no to begin with. So I always feel like, give it a whirl.
Well, and that asking for help in and of itself is courage. But think about yourself. Like, if someone came to you asking for help, you would drop everything and help them.
I'd love to. It makes you, the truth is that when you help people, when you do, you feel good. When you can offer help, lend somebody money, lend somebody advice, help, support, a hug, love during a time of grief, when they lose somebody, showing up for somebody when they lost a loved one, going to a funeral, like those things are priceless. I mean, that to me is like, that's what our point of being here is for, is to show up for people in every way you can.
What was another moment of courage that you reflected on?
Oh, God. Let me think for a second. A moment of courage. You know, I have to be a little opaque here, but I will just say asking, I think that women tend to play not to lose versus men who play to win. Which is why you will look around and see that women are 5% of the CEOs at Fortune 500 companies, and only been 4 women on the Supreme Court out of 103. You know, women are not in certain areas, and women that I have spoken to at conferences and different things say to me, I'm afraid to ask for what I deserve. How do I do that? And it's hard because men are more built to go in and say, I demand this, you give it to me. We, for whatever reason, we're wired differently and we have to change the way we think. So for me, what I feel really good about is that I have had the courage to demand what I believe and know I'm worth.
How does that manifest itself in you? Like, how do you summon the courage to have those conversations? Because the compensation question itself is, the conversation is so hard for most people, but especially women.
It is, you know, there's a lot of white space when it comes to this discussion. And I think women are afraid, they feel very uncomfortable asking for things. And it must clearly be a gender thing. And I feel like we must change our mindset, and we have to. Women in positions of power who have a platform must open the doors for more women. And I think that's something that we have not done well. Most of the people that have helped me through my career have been men. That's just a fact, not women. And so I think for myself, that little play to win, don't play not to lose, play to win. If that is the mindset that we need to adopt, and we have to recognize that we are just as valuable as our male counterparts. And, you know, so I think that we have to sort of tell ourselves a different story. For me, I knew what my value was, and I knew that I had so many other opportunities. I was lucky. So I felt that I had the courage in me because I knew there were other options. And so I was in a good spot, but most women have to start to recognize their worth. If you don't think you're worth it, nobody else will. So if you walk in the room shaking and not confident, you're not getting anything. Mm-hmm. You need to know your worth, know your value, walk in there guns blazing, because I guarantee you are worth it. You really are. And you have to know it yourself first.
Think back to a hard conversation that you had with anybody. It could be your kids or a peer or a boss. What was that like having the courage to have that hard conversation?
So, oh my God, I don't know why I'm going here. I don't know why I'm going here with you, but I'm going to go here with you. So here we go. Because it's just fresh in my mind. So I have a 16-year-old son who is currently in a wilderness program. His dad and I had to sit down with him about 6 weeks ago and tell him that we were pulling him out of school, 11th grade, and we're putting him in a program. It's called True North, where he is now, and he's doing great because he was depressed and he was also smoking marijuana on a daily basis. I don't know why I'm going here. But so the decision, that discussion with a 16-year-old boy who's like 6 feet tall, we gave him an hour to pack his stuff and go. Wow. And to sit down and do that, for me, like I went into the other room before we spoke to him and I wept. I cried because, you know, there was a side of me that's saying maybe he could just stay and he'll figure it out. And, you know, he just signed up for the swim team. I think he'll be okay. And then this saying, the Stoic set, this saying that I kept hearing is hard choices, easy life, easy choices, hard life. And I was like, you know what, girl, you got to buck up. I know you're a Jewish mom and you want to keep him home and see his beautiful face every day, but he's in struggle mode. And part of love, I'm getting goosebumps. Part of love is doing hard stuff for your kids. That's why I think, honestly, Allison, a lot of people who have a lot of wealth and buy their kids cars and fancy trips, they're doing them a disservice. They're crippling them because they're not helping them to find their goal, their true north, and that we see a lot of that in New York City. But for me, that conversation with my son, his name is Jake, and it was really hard. I mean, but it was the right thing to do. And so we just, you know, sat down, spoke from our hearts, and he heard us and he was receptive to it. It took a little bit. He was angry at first. But that is a conversation more personal, not business related. But, you know, we all have personal lives too that impact us. And that was tough. I'll be honest with you. That was one of the hardest things I've had to do in my personal life ever.
Thank you for sharing that. It's like, I
don't know why you are an easy person to talk to, Allison.
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I have two little ones right now, and the courage that it takes to be a good mom and a good leader and a good wife and a good sister. But it's not just good. It's the best. When you have that belief in yourself that you can be, it's like you expect every moment of your life to be the best at whatever you touch, whoever you affect. And that's not always possible. So that struggle is so real and vivid in every conversation, whether it be like convincing my kid to go to bed at night and not giving him his 50th hug. And like, I know that those situations are around the corner for me. So it really, you know, women to women, helping each other out, talk through this stuff, that you're not alone, that no matter how successful you are in your career, you still had that parenting moment. You know,
yeah, it's so true. And it's, you know, women are, you know, look at you, you have two small children, you're doing all these things. And I see women all over who are doing the mad hustle juggle. Like they are the moms, they are making money, they are, you know, dressing the part, they're doing all these things and they're burdened with all this stuff, yet they do it so incredibly well. And men traditionally do not have the same stuff. You know, they don't deal with, I always dealt with the teachers, the dentists, the after school, the problems, the issues. I dealt with all of it. Plus I went to work. Plus I made the money. Plus, you know, and so I think women need to be gentle with themselves and understand that they're incredible. They are fantastic. They are the heroes, I think, of our world, and they are the future. Women are the future. There's no doubt in my mind. I believe that wholeheartedly.
Switching gears on you a little bit to real estate. So clearly we've all witnessed the real estate chaos that has been the last couple of years, but how do you have the courage to be a leader through it all?
You know, I think everything is about the people you get to work with, your team. And we have, the people I work with, I'm very fortunate, privileged to work with such an esteemed group of people who are so smart, so capable. And they together, you know, we brainstorm. There's so much I don't know, and there's so much that they don't know, and we complement each other and work together and have honest and open conversations. You know, the real estate space, you know, during the pandemic, as you probably know, Allison, I know you love New York City like I do, mm-hmm. but during the pandemic, we got hit really hard. A lot of people fled. And people were like, well, will we ever sell anything again in New York right. City? Will people return to New York City? And then, you know, about a year ago, we got the vaccine. And of course, people returned to cities. And now the housing market is unstoppable. It's been a crazy historic year for us in real estate. And so I think a company is only as good as its people. And we are a privately owned company that has been around a long time, and we have wonderful leadership and incredible agents that are smart, knowledgeable, been doing this a long time. And I think that's kind of what makes us a little bit different than everybody else. I mean, profits are not our purpose. We're here to serve and take care of people and do things at the highest level. And that's not a pitch. It's just who we are as real estate professionals, and people who work with us know that. So we've been through the ups and downs, and there's always ups and downs. You know, 9/11 was a challenge. Lehman Brothers collapsing, that was a challenge. There's so many challenges emotionally, the pandemic, people died. We lost an agent to COVID, all this stuff but you know, we work together, we show love, and we take care of each other, and we get through it. So it's really a team sport.
What has been the hardest part about leadership that you wish you knew early on in your career?
Oh God, that's such a good question. The hardest part, I wish that I had known to be a little bit more, forthcoming, vulnerable, show weakness. Because it always appeared like you had to have it all together, have it all figured out, know it all, be strong. Showing weakness was not something that I wanted to do early on. I wasn't aware. I wanted to kind of keep it all together. And but I know now that I have to be very honest about what I don't know. And there's a lot I don't know. And so that's kind of something early on I didn't realize. I just kind of would be like, act like I knew things when I didn't know them. And I think that was a little bit naive, and me trying to kind of, you know, figure it out. And I've learned now that I have to, when I don't know something, when somebody says something I don't know, I go, what does that mean? Because I want to be smarter. I want to learn. I always say I'm a student of everything. And I think, you know, not all readers are leaders, but all leaders are readers. That I know for sure. And so I'm constantly like, the more I like learn, the more I'm like, shit, I don't know anything, you know? And so I think that was probably early on a bit of my, you know, learning curve. And there's probably many other things if I think about it.
And lastly, what advice would you give to up and coming leaders as they're about to embark on this journey that they think they want?
I would say two things. One, really dig into what drives you and who you are, you know, like what inspires you, where do you get that? Like, you know, you want to jump out of bed and go to, like, what part of it do you love, and focus on that. And be your true self at it. And, you know, a lot of the other thing I would just say, just for people who are trying to figure out, like young Gen Zers, not Gen Xers, I'm a Gen Xer. Even though my kids always say, okay, boomer, I'm like, I'm not a boomer. I'm a Gen Xer. So stop saying that. I'm sure you've heard that before, right, Allison?
Oh yeah. I'm the upper end of the millennial believe it or not. So they get the worst rap. So it's I want to say that on this podcast.
Well, millennials, I'm seeing evolve a little bit because we are now seeing that millennials are the biggest segment of first time home buyers. Mm-hmm. And your group used to be considered the unburdened group, the group that wanted to have experiences, go to Burning Man, forget about buying a house. We're going to just go have fun and paint the town red. But now millennials, we're seeing them sort of like get more serious and commit. So you guys are becoming more committed as a generation. Right, so you should feel like good about that.
All right. I like that.
But the one thing I would just impart, and this is what I say to my kids, is you hear all the time as you're growing up, you can be anything you want. You can, I don't necessarily ascribe to that mentality. I think you should do what you're good at, because what you love to do, you may love to play the trumpet. I love to sing and I suck. My free time, I can turn on the radio and like blast some music. I love to play Mahjong too, by the way, but I'm pretty good at that, but I can't make a living at it. So what I would say to people, find what you're really good at. And hopefully you like it too. And that's what you should try to think of as a career, because what you love, you're not always good at. And so I always feel like it's not good to tell kids you can do whatever you want, whatever you love. I don't know if that's actually the truth, because sometimes what you love, you're not good at. So that would be my little piece of advice.
I love it. Well, thank you for having the courage to be vulnerable on our podcast. It was
love talking
fabulous.
To you, Allison. Thank fabulous. You for having me. You're a superstar. So good. You're a great, you know how to do an interview, my friend. You really do.
Thank you, Bess. All right. Take care.
Talk to you later. Bye.